Chapter 15. Because he needed to know, he returned. He needed to know whether or not he was doomed, and along with him the revived Jedi Order he had created. Vergeir peered up at Luke from her perch on the stool. "Come to ask more questions?" she inquired. "I should warn you, I've already spent my day answering questions from Fleet Intelligence, and I'm tired of it." "I'll trade you," Luke said. "One of my questions for one of yours." Her whiskers rippled. "You didn't answer my last. If you can't detect the Yuuzhan Vong in the Force, is the fault with the Yuuzhan Vong, or with your perceptions?" Luke settled onto the chair opposite Vergeir. "You left out a third possibility. The fault may be in the Force." Vergeir's feathery crest rose in surprise. "Is this your answer?" "No, I don't have an answer," Luke admitted. He looked at Vergeir. "Do you?" Vergeir smoothed her crest with one hand. "Is that your first question?" "It is." Vergeir paused for a long moment, as if mentally rehearsing an answer. "Before I can answer, I need to know whether Jason told you what happened to me on Zonama Seacoat." "He did," Luke said. "So you know that I chose to accompany the Yuuzhan Vong in order to discover their true nature?" "You spent 50 years with them. And so if anyone should have an answer to the question of whether the Yuuzhan Vong are outside the Force, it should be you." "Yes." There was a long pause while Luke waited for Vergeir to continue. Then she said, "That was your answer." Luke smiled. "The answer to my first question is yes." "Correct. And I'll have to ask another question if I want further information. Also correct." "Isn't this a little bit childish?" Her feathers fluffed, then smoothed. "It's your game, not mine. And I believe it's my turn." He shrugged. "Go ahead." She fixed him with her tilted eyes. "If the Yuuzhan Vong are completely outside the Force, what does that imply for the Jedi and our beliefs?" Luke hesitated. This wasn't just a question. This was the question of questions, the issue he had been wrestling since the invasion began. When he spoke carefully. "It implies that our knowledge of the Force is in error, or incomplete. Or it implies that the Vong are an aberration, a profanation of the Force, a thing that should not be." He hesitated again, but the implacable logic of his train of thought forced him to continue. "To life we owe our compassion and our duty. But I must wonder what we owe to something completely outside our definition of life, to something that is a kind of living death. I must wonder if we owe them anything but a real death." "You shrink from this thought." It was a statement, not a question. "Any being of conscience must," Luke said. He could feel tension in his clenched jaw muscles. "But still it is my duty to the Jedi not to fear where this leads." He centered himself and tried to send the tension into the far distance. "My turn," he said. Vergeir nodded. "Proceed." He took a breath and forced himself to ask the question that he suspected would doom him. "Are the Yuuzhan Vong outside the Force?" "I have only what amounts to an opinion. But it's the opinion of a Jedi Knight, experienced in the Force, who has spent 50 years among the Yuuzhan Vong." "Yes. And my opinion is this. By definition, the Force is all life, and all life is the Force. So therefore the Yuuzhan Vong, who are living beings, are within the Force, even though we can't see them there." Luke felt months-long tension draining from his limbs, and a heavy stone fly weightless from his heart. "Thank you," he murmured. She looked at him and spoke with quiet intensity. "You owe to the Yuuzhan Vong the same measure of compassion you owe to all life. no war of extermination is justified. You will not have to eradicate this profanation from the heart of existence." Luke bowed his head. "Thank you," he repeated. "Why were you afraid of my answer?" "Because if the enemy were not life, if they did not deserve compassion, then leading a war against them would have furnished a means of letting the dark side enter not only myself, but all the Jedi I have trained as well." "My understanding of your position, then, is that such traits as anger and aggression are to be avoided, because they may lead to domination of the mind and spirit by the dark side of the Force." Luke looked at her. "Was that your second question?" "Young Master," Vergeer said, "it was phrased very carefully so as not to be a question. I was merely attempting a clarification of your position." Luke smiled. "Yes, your understanding is correct. Then my next question is this. Do you believe that nature would have given us traits such as anger and aggression if they were not useful?" "Useful for what?" Luke countered. "They are useful to the dark side. What use does a Jedi have for anger and aggression? The Jedi Code is specific. We act not from passion, but from serenity." Vergeer settled onto her stool. "I understand now," she said. "Our difference concerns where this serenity originates. You believe serenity is an absence of passion, but I believe it is a consequence of knowledge, and self-knowledge most of all." "If passion is not opposed to serenity," Luke said, "why are they paired in the Jedi Code?" "Because the consequences of these two states of mind are opposed to one another. An unchecked passion produces actions that are hasty, ill-considered, and often destructive. Serenity, on the other hand, may well result in no action at all. And when it does, serenity produces actions that proceed from knowledge and deliberation, if not from wisdom." Her wide mouth suggested a smile. "My turn. I haven't asked my question yet. I beg your pardon, but you asked a question about the Jedi Code. I answered." Luke sighed. "Very well, though it seems to me that I'm conceding a great deal. On the contrary, you're acting from serene self-knowledge." Luke laughed. "If you insist, I do." Vergeer stroked her delicate whiskers and considered her next question. "It was my observation that on your last visit you were angry with me. You believed that I had deliberately harmed your apprentice, which was accurate, though your anger was moderated somewhat when I explained my motivations." "That's true," Luke admitted. "Now my question is, was that anger dark? Was it an evil passion that possessed you, such that the dark side might have taken you as a consequence?" Luke chose his thoughts carefully. "It could have been. If I had used that anger to strike out at you, or harm you, particularly through the Force, then it would have been a dark passion. Young Master, it is my contention that the anger you experienced was natural and useful. I caused deliberate harm, pain and anguish and suffering over a period of weeks, to a young man for whom you had accepted responsibility and for whom you felt a measure of love. Naturally you felt anger. Naturally you wanted to break my thin little neck. It is absolutely natural, when you discover that a person has inflicted deliberate pain on a helpless victim, to feel angry with that person. It is equally as natural an emotion as to feel compassion for the victim." Vergeer fell silent, and Luke let the silence build. After a moment, Vergeer bobbed her head. "Very well, young master. You are correct when you said that if you had entered my cell and struck out at me with the Force, that such an action would have been dark. But you didn't. Instead, your anger prompted you to speak to me and find out the reasons for my actions. To that extent, your anger was not only natural, but useful. It led to understanding on both our parts. She paused. I'm about to ask a rhetorical question. You need not answer. Thank you for the warning. My rhetorical question is, why wasn't your anger dark? And my answer is, because you understood it. You understood the cause of the emotion, and therefore it did not seize power over you. Luke thought for a moment. It is your contention, then, he said, that to understand an emotion is to prevent its being dark. Unreasoning passion is the province of darkness, Verger said. But an understood emotion is not unreasoning. That is why the route to mastery is through self-knowledge. Her tilted eyes widened. It's not possible to suppress all emotion, nor is it desirable. An emotionless person is no more than a machine. But to understand the origin and nature of one's feelings, that is possible. When Darth Vader and the Emperor held me prisoner, Luke said, they kept urging me to surrender to my anger. Your anger was a natural response to your captivity, and they wished to make use of it. They wished to fan your anger into a burning rage that would allow the darkness to enter. But any unreasoning passion would do. When anger becomes rage, fear becomes terror, love becomes obsession, self-esteem becomes vainglory. Then a natural and useful emotion becomes an unreasoning compulsion, and the darkness is. I let the dark side take me, Luke said. I cut off my father's hand. Ah. Verger nodded. Now I understand much. When my rage took control, I felt invincible. I felt complete. I felt free. Verger nodded again. When you are in the grip of an irresistible compulsion, it is then that you feel most like yourself. But in reality, it was you who were passive then. You let the feeling control you. My turn for a question, Luke said, and at that point a comm unit chimed. Master Skywalker, Neely Kirk's voice said, a fleet has just arrived out of hyperspace and they wish to contact you. Verger blinked at him. Next time, she said. Luke rose. Next time, he said. Outside, Neely Kirka met him with a bow. 16 ships just arrived, mostly freighters or modified freighters, but including a Star Destroyer, Errant Venture. There are messages to you from Captain Card and also from Lando Calrissian, who commands one of the ships. Thank you. Neely Kirka walked with him to the nearest comm unit. I'm running out of questions to ask her, the Temarian said, and I'm running out of reasons to hold her. Keep her until I can talk to her one more time, Luke said. I'm still not convinced that she's benign. The Temarian's air sac pulsed meditatively. Then why would she rescue Jason? To gain access to the Jedi, perhaps so she can destroy us. Air whistled from Neely Kirker's sac. No wonder you want her held. The problem, Luke thought, was that if Verger was as powerful as he thought, she wouldn't be in Neely Kirk's cell any longer than she wanted to be there. Luke stepped aboard Wildcard to a salute from a double row of skull-headed, glowing-eyed droids with massive physiques and sloping foreheads. The ship smelled of machine oil. Luke returned the salute and marched down the line to be embraced by Lando Calrissian and to have his hand pumped by Talon Card. "I see your droid factory is thriving," Luke told Lando. "Everything you see," Lando said with a grin, "is for sale to the government for a very reasonable price." Luke frowned at his friend's flippant remark. "That strongly depends on whether we get a government," he said. Card looked serious and tugged his small goatee. "You'd better tell us about that," he said. Card took Luke to his cabin, and Luke told Lando and Card of the latest developments in the Senate.
There have always been rumors about Fjord Rodan, he said finally. Rumors that he's connected with smuggling operations on the Rim. If either of you know any of the details, perhaps you can help us. Discredit Rodan by associating him with us? Card said, and laughed. No offense, Luke said. None taken, Card said. But I'm afraid I can't help you. It's not Fjord Rodan who's the smuggler, it's his older brother Tormak. Tormak Rodan used to fly out of Nar Shaddaa for Jabba the Hutt, Lando said. After Jabba had his, accident, Tormak went independent and set up on the Rim. He and his brother hate each other, Card added. Tormak was into anything shady, and little brother Fjord grew up as straight-laced as they come, probably in reaction to how big brother Tormak behaved. If Fjord's sensitive on the subject of smuggling, I guess that's why. Still, he added, stroking his goatee, I think Lando and I can help your candidate along. Alarm tingled along Luke's nerves. How? He asked. Card gave a private little smile. It's best you don't know. I don't want Cal Omis discredited, Luke said quickly. If you get caught in something shady, no one will believe that Cal wasn't behind it. Lando put a reassuring hand on Luke's arm. Not getting caught at something shady is our specialty. There's always a first time. Luke, Lando said, we're just businessmen. We're trying to get government contracts. We have a perfectly legitimate reason for talking to anyone who could help us. And we have 16 ships full of supplies that we're donating to the refugees on Mon Calamari, Card added, all courtesy of the Smugglers' Alliance. So, we're going to be very, very popular for a while, and politicians will want to be seen with us. I'm not sure I like what I'm hearing, Luke said. Then we'll change the subject, Card said smoothly. He opened a locker and took out a metal container, which he thumped down onto the table and opened. Like it? Luke saw a boxy, wheeled droid, and gave a little shiver of distaste. It looks like a mouse droid, he said. Millions of mouse droids were in existence, chittering and squeaking and running their obscure errands beneath the feet of annoyed citizens. Why anyone had chosen to model a droid on disease-carrying vermin was beyond him. It's a mouse droid chassis, Lando said. We get them cheap. People practically pay us to take them away. But this mouse droid now contains the sensor unit of one of our Yuuzhan Vong hunter droids. Ah, Luke said, understanding. The Yuuzhan Vong hunter units are better at sensing Yuuzhan Vong than they are at sensing humans, Card said. But they are aggressive and, well, murderous, Lando said. Card gave him a sharp look. Conspicuous was the word I was looking for. He tapped the mouse droid. One of our YVHM units can sniff out Yuuzhan Vong infiltrators, and, unlike one of our hunters, won't be tempted to immediately blow him to smithereens. Instead, it can be programmed to follow the infiltrator, record his movements, and take note of anyone that the infiltrator talks to. Whoever notices a mouse droid, Lando said. Most people do their best to avoid noticing them. Our next model will feature a small repulsor lift. Flying Yuuzhan Vong hunters. Just think about it. Luke had been making some quiet calculations while the others were involved with their sales pitch. I don't think you should talk about your YVHM models to just anybody, he said. We want these to be a surprise, especially to the Yuuzhan Vong. Lando smiled and nodded. Can you suggest who we should talk to? Diff Scour and Idar Neely Kirka for two. The head of New Republic Intelligence and his military equivalent. That's very good. Luke reached out and gave the smooth plastic surface of the mouse droid a pat. I have a feeling, he said. This little critter is going to be very, very useful. Trickster was parked in orbit around Kashyyyk, and a group of Wookiee technicians descended on it, supervised by Lobaka. Quarters for the Twin Suns Squadron and docking bay space for their X-Wings had been found on the old Rendili dreadnought Starsider, which had been converted to a tender and supply depot for other ships. Jaina found her new cabin and threw herself down on a mattress that still smelled of the previous occupant's unwashed body. The first thing she checked were the holomessages that had piled up waiting for her while she'd been on the Obroa Sky mission. Yes, there was a holomessage from Jason. Her fingers trembled as she pressed the buttons that would play the recording. "Hi," Jason said. "I'm back from the dead." And he looked it. He was 10 or 12 kilos underweight, and the long hair and scraggly beard gave him the appearance of a hermit just rescued from a long period of fasting in the desert. He briefly explained that he'd been held prisoner by the Yuuzhan Vong, and rescued by a Jedi named Verger, a Jedi of the Old Republic. "I'm sorry I didn't try to contact you through our twin bond," he said. "You were in my thoughts the whole time. But I knew that the Yuuzhan Vong wanted you to try to rescue me. They were ready for it. They wanted to sacrifice us both in a special ceremony. So my greatest chance of staying alive was to keep you as far away from me as possible. They tell me you've played a big part in a victory." His brown eyes gazed mildly out of the hollow. "I hope that means you've been all right while I've been away. It must have been bad enough knowing that Anakin was dead without thinking that I was gone as well." He hesitated. "I know you're too sensible to get into anything really hurtful, but I hope you're well, and I hope we'll be able to talk soon. Tell Loey and everyone hi. Take care. I love you." The holographic image fizzled out. Jaina's thoughts whirled. It seemed she was forgiven for not trying to contact Jason through the twin bond they shared. But on the other hand, Jason seemed to have sensed, or perhaps heard about, her mad, angry brush with the dark side, her surrender to the fury that was her legacy through the blood of Vader. What could she tell Jason? It had been bad enough confessing her actions to her mother. The next message was from Jagged Fell, reporting that he'd encountered her mother and father on the Hidian Way, and that Leia had told him Jason had escaped the Yuuzhan Vong. "Did everyone know before I did?" she thought. "I've missed you," Jag said. "I wish I was with you. I wish I could see your reaction when you find out that Jason is alive. I want to kiss you in celebration." Even though she wanted to bask in misery at this moment, Jag's words brightened her spirit. The memory of his arms around her, and the phantom taste of his lips on hers, whispered like a warm summer wind through her memory. She really couldn't, she thought. Being in love at a time like this was madness. Not when death reached out to her at every moment, when another person to love meant only another person to mourn when the time came. But Jason had come back. Perhaps that meant that things had changed. Her mind whirled, but one thing was clear. Soon death would come for her. The fewer people to mourn then, the better. Jaina found Kip Duron in the pilot's mess, chewing without enthusiasm on a reconstituted, freeze-dried Iagoin steak that may have been in a storage locker since the days of Empress Teta. "Grade One," he said, looking up. "Please exercise your godly powers and summon real food. We're orbiting 600 kilometers above the greenest planet in the New Republic, and the mess can't seem to find any fresh vegetables." He paused, then looked at her in surprise. "What's wrong, Styx?"
"Jason's alive," she said. "He's on Mon Calamari with Uncle Luke and Mara."
Kip's expression cleared. "Wonderful," he said. "Get yourself a plate of rehydrated salthia bean paste, and we'll have a feast and celebrate." Jaina sat heavily on the seat opposite him.
"What do I tell him I've been up to since he was captured?" she asked.
Comprehension dawned. I see, Kip said. Well...
He looked down at his plate and pushed the iogoyne away with distaste, then looked at Gina again.
You may as well tell him the truth.
There's more to it than that, Gina said. During his capture, he made no attempt to contact me through the Force, for fear that I'd try to rescue him and run into a trap. So what do I tell him? That because he didn't contact me, I ran amok? What's that going to do to him?
Kip listened carefully and nodded. I understand your concern, he said. But I think Jason can take care of himself. He always has. And besides, Anakin's death had as much to do with your going to the dark as Jason's capture did.
Maybe so. But it's hard to know how he's going to take things. What if it sends him into another spiral of whatever it was that paralyzed him in the first place?
You saw the hologram, Kip said. Did he look paralyzed?
Gina found herself smiling. No. He looked like he'd been through a lot, but he looked all right. And he was right enough to be concerned about me.
Kip nodded at her solemnly. Then I think, when you see him, you'll know what to say.
Gina looked at her hands. I hope so.
Kip grinned. Is there anything else that's going to keep you from celebrating?
Gina smiled, but sobered quickly.
Admiral Kreefe, she said. He and the Bothans have gone mad. They've all decided they're going to wipe out the Yuuzhan Vong to the last germ cell. So now we have a commander who's bent on destroying a whole species.
She looked at him. Is that an invitation to the dark side, or what?
Kip was impressed. Even I never went that far, he said.
He leaned across the table toward Jaina.
I think that the dark side can only take command when you're feeling certain emotions, he said. In my case, it was anger. In yours, it was the desire for vengeance.
On behalf of a brother who turned out not to be dead, Jaina said bitterly.
As well as the one who was.
Yes, that was wrong, and we're agreed on that. But I think we should try to make several distinctions here.
All right, Jaina said, though she felt cautious at the idea of too many shadings and distinctions between light and dark.
There's aggression for its own sake, which is bad,
yes.
There's defensive war, fighting against invaders on behalf of your own worlds or people or government, which, if not necessarily good, is at least justified.
Jaina nodded. I'm following you.
And then there's a counterattack in an otherwise defensive war, which was Obroa Sky.
And it's what?
Jaina asked. Good? Bad? Justified?
Justified, Kip said.
I've been thinking hard about this, and I think justified. Then he saw Jaina's dubious look and said, Let me give you an analogy.
All right.
Say you have a friend who has something valuable, like a ring, and a thief attacks your friend and steals the ring, and for some reason you can't prevent it.
I'm following you.
And later you meet the thief, and you see the thief wearing the ring. So is it aggression to bring the thief to justice and return the ring to its rightful owner?
So you're saying, Jaina said, that the thief is like the Yuuzhan Vong, who have been stealing our worlds, and that it's not aggression to want our worlds back and the Yuuzhan Vong out of our hair?
I'm not saying that there isn't a degree of aggression, but I'm saying it's justified.
But if your aggression lets in the dark...
Then it's not justified, Kip said.
He sighed.
Look, you can go after the thief because you're angry at him, and you want to give him a good pounding. Or you can go after the thief because you want to see justice done. There's a difference. Anger is dark, but the love of justice is light.
And perfect justice is impossible, Jaina countered. Perfect justice isn't the issue. You're setting too high a standard. We haven't sworn oaths to be perfect.
He considered for a moment. Look, it's like when Luke was fighting Darth Vader, and the Emperor stood by urging him to strike out of anger. Fighting Darth Vader wasn't the wrong thing to do, but fighting him out of anger was.
Jaina looked at him for a long time. No offense, Kip, but I wish it was Uncle Luke who was making this argument, not the greatest living expert on the dark side of the Force.
Kip looked at her soberly.
So do I, Jaina. So do I.
When Winter opened the door, there was a slight hiss of changing pressure. She saw Luke, Mara, and Jason, and stepped away from the door to let them inside.
Please, come in.
Admiral Ackbar's apartment was deep below sea level in Herkia Floating City, and was filled with the scent of the ocean. The rooms were rounded and dimly lit, and echoed to the music of falling water. There were deep seawater pools in every room, connected by submerged tunnels or by channels spanned by small arched bridges. The walls and ceilings shimmered with golden light reflected by the waves, and the floors were tiled in colors that reflected the moods of the sea, green, blue, turquoise, and aquamarine. The door hissed shut behind them. Winter wore a long white gown and a necklace of sea-green jade. She greeted Luke and Mara with an embrace and kissed Jason on each cheek.
"How is the Admiral?" Luke asked.
He pitched his voice low in the hope that these artificial caverns wouldn't amplify his voice and carry it through the house.
"His body is failing him," Winter said.
Her calm voice was matter of fact, but Luke could see the lines of sadness radiating from the corners of her eyes.
"Can anything be done?" Mara asked. "As he told you the other day, there's no single thing wrong," Winter said. "The real problem is age, and the way he drove himself during the rebellion. He wasn't young even then, you know."
"I suppose not," Luke said. "It never occurred to me to wonder how old he was. He seemed as young as he needed to be, I guess."
"You'll find his mind is as supple as ever," Winter said. "He can still work for 10 hours at a stretch if he takes care of his body."
"Work?" Mara asked. "At what?"
"I'll let Ackbar tell you that."
Luke, Mara, and Jason followed the tall, white-haired woman over a small bridge and across stepping stones, actually the tops of tall pillars, set in a quiet pool. They came to a comfortable drawing room with a central pool set amid comfortable furniture. There Ackbar waited, bobbing in the pool. He waved one huge hand.
"Luke," he called. "Mara, young Jason, welcome to my home."
His voice showed no sign of the slurred diction it had shown in Admiral Sov's office, and boomed out as vigorously as if he were shouting orders on the bridge of his flagship.
"Thank you, sir," Luke said. "Please seat yourselves. Forgive me for not joining you. I'm much more comfortable these days if I stay in water."
"Your home is lovely," Mara said.
"It suits me," Ackbar said simply.
Winter efficiently served refreshments while Ackbar and his guests chatted. Then Ackbar floated toward Jason and looked up at him with his goggle eyes.
"Can you tell me of the Yuuzhan Vong, young Jason?"
"I'm willing," Jason said. "But it's a large topic.
You're the only person I know who has any exposure to them. Tell me what you can."
Jason spoke for a long time, of the Yuuzhan Vong and their castes, their leadership, their religion, the way they interacted with each other and their captives. He touched on his own experience only lightly. Luke was surprised and impressed that Jason, in pain and in slavery and alone, had observed his captors so acutely. and was able to organize his material so well. Winter listened in silence, and after a while sat on the edge of the pool, pulled up her gown, and dangled her legs in the water. Akbar floated next to her, and she rested an affectionate hand on his sloping, glabrous shoulder. Luke watched them and thought of the many tragedies contained in Winter's mind. The white-haired woman possessed a holographic memory that recorded her entire life in perfect detail, but would not permit her to forget. The grief she must have felt at the destruction of her home world of Alderaan, with her family and friends, was as fresh in her mind now as it had been 27 years ago. The battles of the rebellion, the struggles against Fergan and Joris Sabaoth, the kidnapping of the infant Anakin Solo. Winter could relive all these with the same intensity with which she'd first experienced them. Likewise, the years she had spent with Jason when he was a child were as vivid as her experience of the adult Jason himself, sitting near her. Winter's mind was a hologram, Luke realized. It contained a complete template of her life. Birth, death, joy, tragedy, violence, triumph, despair. Seen that way, it wasn't surprising that she'd joined Akbar in his retirement. Perhaps her mind contained more than enough severe experience by now, and she needed tranquil memories to place alongside those that were not in the least tranquil. But now, as Akbar declined, Winter was going to acquire even more long, sad memories that she would never be able to forget. Akbar listened to Jason's story, and then he and Winter asked a series of questions. Finally, Akbar sighed and settled peacefully in the water. "Very good," he said. "I know how to beat them now." Luke looked at the Admiral in surprise. "So that's what you've been working on?" "Oh, yes." Akbar looked up at Winter and gave her knee a pat. "With Winter as my memory and my invaluable assistant, I've been working very hard on a strategic plan for the war. And now Jason has confirmed my ideas of the Yuuzhan Vong character. I think victory is now conceivable." "Are you planning to come out of retirement?" Luke asked. Akbar gave a burbling sigh. "I don't know if that's possible. Admiral Sov is willing to take my counsel on this matter, but will anyone listen to poor Admiral Sov?" "They'll listen to you," Luke said. "I can't imagine anyone not listening."
"Borsk Felya wouldn't listen," Akbar said, "and Borsk Felya had many friends."
He shook his huge head. "I truly miss Mon Mothma. We understood one another. Our skills were so entirely complementary. She and I were a perfect team. She the great orator and politician, and I her sword. She was able to see the traps that I was blind to, and I saw the dangers that she could not see. Her wisdom saw the rebellion to its conclusion, and created the New Republic. And with my fleets, I helped bring about the defeat of the Empire." Again he shook his head. "She spoiled me," he said. "She understood my methods, and I understood hers. Since her passing, I've had to deal with others who were not so understanding, and I lacked the skill for it. I had never needed it before."
He sighed, and for the first time he slurred his words, as he had the other day.
"Mon Mothma. Perhaps I shouldn't have outlived her."
Winter looked at Akbar in concern.
"Never say that."
"No," Luke said. "You still have much to contribute. Your plan will prove that."
Akbar sighed again.
"But who will see this plan? It requires not only the cooperation of the military, but of the highest levels of government. And our government has no highest levels."
Akbar was obviously tired, and the visitors didn't stay long after that. As Winter saw them out, she paused and put a hand on Jason's shoulder.
"I was so sorry to hear about Anakin," she said.
Jason nodded slowly. "He was always grateful to you," he said. "He knew how you fought for him on Anoth." His two hands took Winter's between them. "If it weren't for you, he wouldn't have had the last 14 years of his life. And it's not just Anakin who was grateful for that. It's Jaina and I and everyone who knew him." He kissed Winter's hand and let it fall. Mara and Luke embraced Winter and left the apartment. Perhaps, Luke thought, Winter's holographic memory was not always a cause for sorrow. She would remember Anakin as an infant, as a growing boy, and those brilliant, undying memories might well be brighter than the more distant knowledge of his death. Somewhere, at least, memories of Anakin were preserved perfectly. Anakin as he was, alive and vital, unscarred by the tragedy that was his end. Luke took great comfort in the thought.